Hello and welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. This is Mark.
This is Vlad.
And we start from Desktop Bridge, or Project Centennial, how we called it many times.
Yeah, so in order to bring your existing programs that you may have had over the past, 20, 30 years of programming on Windows into the new age and onto the new Windows Store, you can use the Desktop Bridge converter and other available technologies here.
Yeah, basically now pretty much any Win32 app can be in Windows Store, and the users on the PC can download them and install like any other app. They can also update them seamlessly, like once update is published by the developer, it will be updated silently, and it's really good.
That's probably one of the most exciting things for me is, if you remember, if you were writing Win32 code or early days, and you would have to get an installer package, which was like
exactly.
A whole nother thing to learn. And then you'd have to figure out a way to do updates. You have to figure out a way to do like release notes and like telemetry. And that's all built into store packages now. So you get all of that goodness on top. You get to just concentrate on just your code itself.
In fact, if you want your existing Win32 app to use Windows Runtime API, you can do that. You can use Store Corners APIs, you can use notifications, you can use live tiles, you can use easier access to camera, to Bluetooth devices. Mm-hmm. This is really great because like trying to access Bluetooth devices on Win32, oh, good luck with that, man.
Yeah, no thanks. And when we say, you know, bring them whatever apps you have, Scott Hanselman has a fantastic example here of a VB6 app, which he starts with, I installed VB6 on Windows 10, and apparently that still works.
Yes.
Of course it does. It's out of support, but these apps are still able to actually come across. So you can take a look at his blog, and he goes through a little bit of information. In particular, he talks about if your app was just X-copyable originally, then this is a super simple situation or scenario to do.
Yeah, you actually don't need any kind of this. You don't need the converter. Mm-hmm. You can just create a package. You can package your app basically to Apex, and that's it. And even if you had an installer just for creating like a shortcut, some people just create an installer for creating a shortcut on the start menu. You don't need it now because you described the live tile, which you're gonna use for launching your app. If you use the desktop bridge.
I need a group in my program files.
Yeah, exactly.
A desktop shortcut and the whole thing. Yeah.
So you just specify it in the manifest and you're good to go.
I'll set that.
And the post, everything that Scott does is beautiful. Talking about new things, there was actually an update for .NET Core, and it's a very important update. So basically the team says, please use this update straight away. What does it have?
Yeah, it's just 1.0.1, so it's not some major feature improvement. It's definitely a maintenance and bug fix release. They had a list here including some Linux seg faults, which is still so weird to hear coming from one of our Microsoft releases. Like, oh, fix a bunch of Linux issues.
Yeah.
That's what we do now. Access violations, the F# template has been updated to .NET Core 1.0. That was not in there in the initial release. That's there now. And there's a couple lists. There's nothing like real like of substance here. It's all kind of maintenance and bug fixes. But get up there so you get out of the all those nasty crash bugs and anything else that was in the initial release.
Yeah. Again, talking about new things. You know, there is a group at Microsoft called Microsoft Garage.
Yes.
They actually do basically experiments.
Yeah.
They shipped a bunch of apps for Android, for iOS, some apps that were initially available only as a Microsoft Garage project. They kind of now becoming bigger and bigger. So they created a new, I would say, website, right? For end users as just a website called Video Breakdown. And this website basically analyzes your video, tries to recognize people, right? So if see what people are on the video, and it also tries to analyze topics of the video. So basically create tags, it does automatic tag creation for your video. So it basically says you what this video is about, right?
Right. I don't know if it goes as far as like transcribing to mm-hmm. get those, but it also I saw did some OCRing. So if it saw language, just text on your screen, it would try to read it and figure out what it's there and add it to the kind of the corpus of tags that it discovered on there. It does not recognize us yet.
Yeah,
we're apparently we're not
famous enough.
We're not famous enough.
Yeah,
but we may have to ping them and get us in there.
Yeah, I noticed that we had a video with several Microsoft folks, mm-hmm. and there was actually one of them was showing a website with a picture of a famous DJ. I forgot the name, and this website actually recognized that DJ.
The picture on the laptop in the video.
Yeah,
it was good.
Yeah, it's really good for famous people.
It's neat. You can totally imagine on Channel 9, for example, we go through a very painstaking process. Every video we upload is tagged, has descriptions added. And if technology like this would be great to go through backlogs of tens of thousands of videos and create a more searchable, more discoverable kind of database of stuff. So cool.
People at Microsoft Garage, make sure it recognizes all Channel 9 hosts.
That's right. We'll give you the shortlist.
Yeah. Cool. Going forward.
From video recognition to speech recognition. So.
Yeah.
This is pretty neat. Just kind of an update on a big milestone. Microsoft researchers have been trying to, for years, speech and natural user interface and interaction has been a big thing for Microsoft. But we've been getting better, but now we have, what was the exact number here? A word error rate of 6.3%.
Yeah.
Which, if you don't know, which I didn't know, is the lowest in the industry, apparently.
Yeah, they love to call it state of the art. They usually call it state of the art, so basically the best available.
Yes.
And this is big because recently Google announced some really good results in speech generation, basically.
Yeah.
They really sound like real human. Mm. And we announced this new milestone in a very high quality speech recognition. So that's a big thing.
Yeah,
we're getting there.
The article says about 20 years ago, the error rate was like half, mm-hmm. practically, 40 something percent of the time you'd get a word wrong, which if you've ever worked with interfaces, you'll know that very low percentages of things not working, mm-hmm. for example, if the enter key didn't work 3% of the time, you would throw that keyboard out.
Yeah.
So imagine 40% of the time, you would just get into a routine where you hit enter twice all the time. So having a such a low there, 6%, is super nice because there's other things we can do, in inferring from context to kind of fill in gaps and stuff, and not you don't always need to know every word in speech, so it's a little less noticeable. But I don't know if you still use Kinect on your Xbox. Mm-hmm. I use that all the time, and Cortana across all my devices. So the fact that we're bringing this prevalent across our entire platform and getting so accurate at it is real cool.
Yeah, and speaking about recognition, again, Azure Media Analytics got a new feature, which is face reduction. For many, many services, it's actually really important, especially for those services that collect something automatically, mm-hmm. right? Without asking people, do you want to be captured? And for them, it's important to reduce people's faces, so to keep privacy. And now Azure Media Analytics can recognize faces, that's again recognition, and once it recognized it, it can redact it and basically blur.
Yeah, blur it out through an entire video. I mean, the article talks about the prevalency of, both body cameras, dash cams, and the amount of media that's collected nowadays. Like Vlad said, you don't have the rights to everyone all the time if you want to be nice about privacy, which everyone should. This is a great way of pulling it through there and getting a good base of protecting people's identities and things online.
Awesome. From recognizing to, I don't know how to call it, but this is really amazing. Xamarin is, it's a very multi-platform thing. We recently talked about how they ported Xamarin Forms to Mac.
To Mac, that was just last week, yeah.
Yeah, that was just last week. And this week they say, we actually made our one of their kind of open source engine. I'm struggling in the spelling this, like Urho,
Sharp.
They basically have a 3D engine. They ported it over to pretty much all the platforms they support. And now they They made it working on HoloLens. And you know, like it's working on HoloLens as a flat app is very different from working on HoloLens as a like mixed reality.
Well, one is just building for Windows essentially, yeah. And then it just runs.
Yeah, if you can build it as a universal Windows app, that's not a big deal running it on HoloLens. But making this 3D engine proper 3D engine on HoloLens, that's a big deal.
That's really what they did.
That's really impressive.
Xamarin's really becoming that one-stop shop for just why not do it there, because you get all these options. You don't even have to include them from the beginning. You can always add on another kind of target as you go along, like just start in Windows, and then add iOS, add HoloLens, add Mac, and it's kind of a neat way to do things.
Great, and it's open source.
Yeah.
Just saying. Speaking about open source and speaking actually about picks of the week, my pick of the week is the fact that Microsoft is the, the most open source company in the world. The GitHub recently has done a study. They called it Octoverse, probably because it's the October is coming. Right?
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, they analyzes all the projects they're hosting, and analyzes like what languages they use, how many contributors they have, how many pull requests they have, how many pull requests from like external, if it's like, let's say, if it's a Microsoft project, how many external contributors they have. And actually, Microsoft is doing a really great job. First of all, .NET Core and Visual Studio Code are one of the most popular projects on GitHub. Really, both from the cloning perspective and downloading perspective and contributing perspective. When I say contributing, I mean external contributors.
Right.
This is really big. Also, they say that Microsoft has the biggest number of contributors. So basically, a lot of Microsoft employees checking code to GitHub. And this is also big, like 16,000. This is
16,500. Yeah. It's the number one on the list above every other company there.
I'm surprised. They're above Facebook, above Google. Like, this is big. This is really new Microsoft.
Yeah. I mean, it obviously helps that a lot of our products now are open source. But I mean, nonetheless, that's still open source software that we are contributing to and developing out in the wild. That's kind of the crazy thing for me, is a developer being able to go and see these enterprise or commercial professional projects being down in the wild and seeing people's coding styles and reminding myself that I'm not the only one who checks in bad code once in a while. But being able to do that is kind of nice to see kind of the history of how things have evolved over time and, you know, why things were fixed or how they were fixed.
Yeah, these days, like in Windows, we may just ask the developer, oh, you know, where is the latest version of your component? And he sends you a link to GitHub. And it's like, okay, well.
Should have known.
Yeah. This is cool, and it also reflects the fact that the VS Code and .NET Core are actually pretty huge.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah absolutely.
Awesome, and your pick of the week.
My pick of the week. So ActionGram Beta is now available. ActionGram is a HoloLens app that lets you embed 3D content in your world, much like all of HoloLens does, but this is specifically captures of objects, living things, inanimate objects that you can then place in the world and record short videos of them interacting with you in your environment. You can make them life-size or small, or, you know, put a person in your fish tank if you want. And highlighted here is the fact that we are announcing that George Takei has been captured in one of our holographic capture environments and is available in here with some of his catchphrases and a couple different reactions. So you can be film a scene. They have a bunch of examples in here, but film a scene where you're telling him a joke and he laughs back at you and you have a conversation. You can do this in your living room with HoloLens today if you're one of the lucky few who has one.
Yeah. So be a director with George Takei. George Takei.
And in fact, they talked to him a little bit, and he talks about, like, you know, his job was talking about holograms, you know, not that long ago, and now he got to be one. He's like, it was pretty crazy that things came full circle, and that he got to be a hologram after, you know, being on air on television talking about them for so long.
How they say, science fiction becomes the reality.
Yeah, absolutely. We chase it all the time.
Yeah, and it's really real.
Yeah,
like that. So awesome, that's it for this week. Thank you for being with us. Have fun.
See you next time.
Bye.